All right. Well, I'm turning that bongo stuff off. So, everybody, you are listening to Man V Mob Man V Mob Radio, not podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin, and this is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. And my in-studio guest tonight is my good friend Ryan. He's been on before. He's been on the podcast. He's a veteran, and I'm thinking that his mic might not work, but I hope it does. Does it work, man? This is a first. I always have to fiddle around. Yeah. Do you want to switch to that one over there? I was going to say, I never have luck with these mics. So we're going to move to mic number two. Mic number three basically never works. That one over there. Sorry about that.
Can you hear me on this one right now?
That's way better. Way better. Okay, cool. Yeah, people are going to like that, being able to hear my guest.
I'm going to like it too.
All right, so tonight's show is going to be, as you'd expect, the 2019 wrap-up, 2020 introduction, and really the decade wrap-up and what we're expecting, what we're hoping for in the next decade. And can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, good.
One hear you.
And basically, I don't remember the start of the 2010s at all, so I don't know if you remember them, Ryan, but...
A little bit, and...
Oh, you want to move it closer to you?
Yeah, I do remember it a little bit, but that's only because we graduated high school in 2011, so...
Oh, yeah.
There were some, and my first girlfriend was junior year of high school, my first real girlfriend, so that was 2010. So 2010, I kicked off the decade with a very serious, well, in my opinion, a serious relationship.
It's a good marker.
And so now, but it's kind of funny... That was pretty bright. I wonder if that was lightning or we just saw something out the window at the studio.
At least the studio lights didn't go out.
When I'm hearing songs sometimes on the radio that are older, like Eminem and, I don't know, various artists, I'll hear them on the radio and I can kind of remember like when I was listening to those, like when they were popular and on the radio. And it's usually around 2010, 2011.
I'm terrible with music. I was realizing that when I was trying to put together a little... what do you call it? Like a, not a montage, but a...
Like a mashup or a
what's
playlist?
What do you call those images where it's like a bunch of... Collage. I was trying to put together a little promotional collage for Instagram for this episode. And I was trying to decide what images represented the 2010s the most. And in the music category, I could not think about what music corresponded to what years at all. I mean, maybe Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift and Kanye probably... come to mind as the big ones.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
I was terrible with that.
The yodeling boy, he was kind of big. These are more recent ones.
Oh yeah,
that yodeling kid that was in like a Walmart.
Yeah. Oh man. Ah, I'm an idiot. I didn't put anything about memes in that collage.
Memes were a big deal. Memes. Yeah. I mean, memes are essentially like came to their current state in the 2010s. So
yeah. I don't think I put anything. Oh, I'm such an idiot. So I basically in the little collage I have Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. I have
the politics.
Yep. I have four tiles for Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple. Then I have the movie tiles, which are all the Marvel stuff, all the Star Wars stuff, The Office, which I thought you'd like, and then a Netflix tile. And then the last couple of tiles were protest movements. So like the Women's March, a Trump rally, an anti-gun march, and a climate march. Yeah. I figured that kind of summed up the decade. But
so it's actually funny. So this morning there was this news company that I kind of follow. They do a morning briefing and they did like the big movements of the decade. So you kind of had a couple overlap. They also added the Arab Spring, which I specifically remember that. I think it was 2010, 2011 ish. Because I remember we were watching, I was at home watching the news like one night and they were filming it live. And you could see, I guess it was Egypt and Tunisians on the street with riots and Molotov cocktails. It was pretty incredible just to see it live, especially. But that Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter.
Wait. Was the Arab Spring, was that 2008? I thought that it was 2008.
I think it was 2010, 2011. Okay. Well, I was definitely a senior of high school.
No, I think you're right.
One of them. I mean, it lasted over several years. So that's the first thing. I don't know. The what was it? Mohamed Bouazizi or whatever. The guy in Tunisia. The self-immolation.
Thought it was Egypt. Was that most of where the Arab Spring took place? No, was it Iran?
Well, it started in Tunisia. It went to Egypt for sure, and then there were various countries. I mean, there may have been a small rise up in Iran or Saudi Arabia, but that was immediately quelled.
Okay. Yeah, it's I was reading an article which I'll probably share some of later on in this program. Get your thoughts on. It was the 10. It was kind of a listicle type article, but by a guy that I really like, Mark Manson, and he was talking about how interestingly with social media, the decade started off with, and I wasn't sure if it was just outside of or just inside of, but the Arab Spring, and there was. That was largely the result of social media organization, and there were these big hopes for democratic movements in places that they weren't likely to appear. And then the end of the decade is social media resulting in anti-democratic movements in locations where they would be unlikely to appear.
Right. Kind of flipped. They flipped in the regions and the ideas went to, No, that's actually a good observation. Definitely. So I had a list, by the way, of those countries, Arab Spring. So, Egypt, Syria, Libya, Tunisia, Yemen, Morocco, Iraq, Oman.
I'm sure some of those, I know very little about any of those countries and their current states and their transitions, but basically I would imagine some of them are better off than they were. Some of them are probably much worse.
Just
Syria comes to mind.
Right. But the thing for me is more like, it's like an idea movement. So even though it may not have resulted in them, whoever, the protesters, those that were rising up, getting the type of government they wanted, it's through the use of social media, ideas of like democratic rights and tenets were spread throughout. So I like to think that they're probably better off in some degree.
Yeah, hard to exactly quantify.
For sure.
I'm looking forward to the CNN compendium or whatever you want to call it when they put together these decades series. I love those.
You do like those. I haven't actually it's usually like pretty long, aren't they, like several episodes in a season?
Yeah, like about 8 1-hour episodes. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope they come out with that in February. Still compiling all the footage, I'm sure. So what would you say were the biggest entertainment aspects of the last decade? Break it down, starting with like television and movies.
So keep in mind, I'm thinking of this from my perspective. So I'm 26 right now.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of this, I was about 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, like, my interests at the time when I was 16, 17 are totally different than what my interests are today.
Sure.
But like, starting backwards was more recent. Are you talking about media, like movies wise?
Anything television. And then, obviously there was a mid decade serious transition to more online content.
Right. So, YouTube, with the advent of like streaming services like Netflix, it is really interesting how shows which were not on air anymore, like The Office, or they're not producing new episodes, and Friends kind of have been reborn again, and like another generation is now able to consume them because of how easy it is to access the content. So
wait, did you just say The Office was off the air when 2010 started?
Well, I don't know what year. I think it was like 2011 or 2012. Wasn't the last?
Okay, so I just
we look it up real quick.
I thought that decade was more defined by
it ran a final season. Episode was 2013.
So it was in there.
It was in there.
Okay,
the beginning of it. But I think I feel like it really came. It became as popular as it is, I feel like, after the show ended.
With streaming, right?
Yeah, exactly. With streaming. I think I'm seeing more references to it on social media and by people from our generation now through mediums like Instagram. I don't really use Facebook anymore, but essentially Instagram. Like I'm seeing I see a ton of Office memes on Instagram. And when I was single, I'd see it on like dating profiles. People would have quotes from The Office or even sometimes Friends, but it's a show that's not out anymore. So it's just kind of interesting to see that, because clearly people are still impacted by the show and people binge watch it. And there was this whole, I think a few times in the decade, Netflix had threatened to remove it off their streaming services. And people were like, oh no, this is horrible. Bring it back. But now that NBC is doing their own streaming service, I think they're going to do Peacock in 2021 or something like that, or 2020. Netflix officially is going to not have rights to those shows, that and Friends and
Peacock service.
Peacock is what they're calling it, I think.
I mean, I can't think of maybe 30 Rock, a couple shows like that, but off the top of my head, I can't think of that many NBC shows that I would be willing to pay a streaming service.
Yeah, Parks and Rec, that's another one that I think was pretty popular, but it also became more popular once streaming services.
I'm watching that right now. I love it.
Parks and Rec is pretty funny. I got through the first few seasons. For some reason, I'm having a hard time committing to long TV shows right now.
Oh, okay.
It's just a big
Time. You're saying like the whole
Whole of the when I know there's like 10 or 13 seasons or something, and I like especially like something like Game of Thrones, I'm like, I really just do not want to sit down. I've gone through 5 seasons. What is there, 8 total?
Probably 8.
And I pretty much forget everything from the first 5.
I don't know why you started that. I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything here, but I think most of us know that people were not satisfied with the conclusion. But do you remember the show Lost that was on in the, I think it was the last decade? Well, neither did I, but people were super obsessed with Lost, and then the last episode aired, and everybody said it was the worst conceived finale to a show that they'd ever seen. And I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to watch this show only to be disappointed by this terrible ending. And I kind of felt the same with Game of Thrones. So I don't know what happened, so
don't spoil it, because one day I may want to go in there and watch it from beginning to end. But
So you're talking about Lost, right? Or
I'm talking about Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. Because so you're 5 seasons in, but you're stopped, you're saying?
Yeah, so I pretty much did this in 2015 when I was studying for my CPA exams. I started to binge watch Game of Thrones. And then I watched it a little more in 2016. And then I lost interest for some reason. So then, and then people at work at 2017, 2016, they're like, oh, you got to finish it. The new season, the last season's coming out. This is perfect. You still have a little bit of time. And I just never got around to it.
Well, you know what? With me setting your expectations low, with telling you how many people hated the finale, you might actually love the finale now.
Yeah, it might be something I enjoy. But I mean, shows like Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad was a 2010 show, was it not?
I think it moved over into the... So the final season was when I was a sophomore, which was now... So yeah, it was, Breaking Bad was mostly in the early part of the 2000s.
Gotcha. Yeah. So 2008 to 2013. Yeah. I'm seeing here. Cool.
Okay. So it was split. But okay, so it's interesting. Yeah, that's because of the streaming services, people are gravitating towards a lot of older content, and it's like that older content has a second life that is even greater than some of the newer content. Yeah. A lot of the newer content.
Yeah, absolutely. But now it's becoming it's hard to want to invest time into a show when you know that there's going to be seasons that you need to follow, like, year after year.
Yeah.
Because if you kind of know it's going to be a good show, like, for instance, I got into Stranger Things, and I think it's a really good show, but it's a little bit annoying how it's just kind of, I'm like, is there any end in sight?
Yeah, see that.
I don't want to be latched on for 2 years or 3 more years or something to a show. Like, I just kind of want I would like resolution and conclusion now. I'm worried I'm not going to even be into Stranger Things in 3 years, you know?
I aborted Stranger Things. I watched one season of it. And
you weren't into it?
I mean, I got the nostalgia thing, but I couldn't really have, and that was the same time It came out.
Right.
And then, you know, I got the whole relation to E.T. and some of that 80s stuff, but... I don't know. It wasn't totally enough for me. The same thing with Westworld. I aborted that as well.
So I'm not a big sci-fi fan, but for some reason, Stranger Things just does it for me. It's totally, once you get into more seasons, you're like, okay, this is a little ridiculous, but in my opinion, it's a good storyline. And I'm building a little bit of a emotional attachment to some of the characters and like their real lives outside, like Billy Bobby Brown, the girl that, Millie Bobby Brown, maybe is her name. The girl that plays L11 in Stranger Things, like, she's actually like really cool. I think she's gonna be like the next like Emma Watson, or Emma, what's her name? The girl that was in Harry Potter. Is that Emma Watson?
Emma Watson.
Yeah.
Maybe when you say cool, you sort of mean like she's, well, I don't really know much about her, but you
she's
know,
like really
Billie Eilish,
is
kind of like a low key,
genuine, yeah, okay. Like kind of humble, yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
I gotcha.
Billie Eilish too, by the way. That's a big artist. But she's only like what, 17 or something?
Yeah. So. She's pretty young, I believe. But I was trying to tell my sister, I couldn't even remember Billie Eilish's name, but I was trying to explain to my sister who she was. And so for those of you listening, who I would hope that none of you know this, my sister lives in Spain, and she is mostly up with a lot of the stuff going on over here, and the artists and the pop culture stuff, but some of it she misses out on, so I have to explain.
I would think Billie Eilish, though, I'll go on like Shazam worldwide or Spotify worldwide just to see what's trending around different countries.
Mm-hmm.
American music is like totally dominates overseas. It's kind of incredible, actually. So I would think Billie Eilish would actually be playing like top 10 songs in Spain or something. But
yeah, it's one of those things that maybe it just didn't make it into her playlist or her group of friends. Okay, so. Yeah, obviously the Marvel movies and the Star Wars movies
are just
dominant.
Have you
seen all those? No, I really only saw a couple of the Marvel movies. I saw the first Avengers, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
None of the Star Wars movies.
So I haven't seen. So here's the other thing. Star Wars, for instance, like I'm totally getting into The Mandalorian right now on Disney Plus. Okay,
I think that actually surprises me.
But want to know why?
Because of Baby Yoda.
Only because of Baby Yoda, and the memes are everywhere on Instagram. And I'm like, okay, this is so cute. I want more context as to this. So I said, what's the harm in giving it two episodes? Okay, you know, two episodes of my time. And now I'm like totally into it. So now I'm thinking about going back and watching the Star Wars movies. I've seen, so I think there's three trilogies right now. The newest one just came out, or is about to come out. The newest movie. The ninth one just came out. Okay. Yeah. So the two prior to that, I believe I saw in theaters. But now I'm thinking about going back and watching the original Star Wars, the original six. The only thing that's going to kind of bother me, and this is going to, I don't know if you remember back when we were in like high school, I said how it was a South Park Family Guy kind of thing. And, yeah. I always said that South Park, the animation just looks so stupid.
I'm way ahead of you on this because I'm thinking like there's no way you're going to be able to get past the original Star Wars movies.
It's just going to look too, it's just I'm not used to seeing things that are like that. It's not that it's badly done. They were obviously great during the time. But I mean, compared to today's standards, it's going to be horrible. So I don't know if I'll be able to look past that. But
Probably not, because even diehard movie purists, people who have been with Star Wars from the beginning or whatever series from the beginning, they go back and they watch the thing that they haven't seen in a long time and they say, through modern eyes, this looks terrible.
Yeah. So
I was that way with Indiana Jones. One of my favorite movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark, watched it again and was somewhat disappointed. My dad was really telling me that I would love this movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, because it was the first movie that he saw when he was young that he thought it was going to be terrible going in, and then he loved it, so he convinced me to watch it with him. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, I was like, oh, yeah, it was pretty good. And he says, oh, I thought it was terrible. I hated this.
That's what he said?
Yeah, complete flip.
So it's actually pretty highly rated. On Rotten Tomatoes has a 90%. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, yeah. 1969 is when the movie came out.
Yep.
Wow.
So...
Did you actually like it, or were you just saying that because you didn't want to?
I think I was somewhat receptive to it. I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. It's interesting. Yeah. What did I watch with my parents the other night? Oh, I might have tricked them a little bit. I really did think that my dad was going to enjoy. You know the Quentin Tarantino movie that just came out, the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yes.
Did you see that?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. So, I knew that he would like a portion of it, but not really like a large section of it, and that's kind of what it was. And it was not exactly a family holiday movie, let's put it that way. I mean, Tarantino, you can only imagine. So maybe I shouldn't have done that, but okay, so I think that the whole Disney owning all of this stuff, Marvel and Star Wars and ESPN and ABC and whatever, like, and Pixar, it's crazy. Disney became, it seems to me, two or three times as big as it was when the decade started.
I think it did, yeah. So I just finished Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney. I finished his book, The Ride of a Lifetime, maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And all of this essentially happened underneath him. And I was like, wow, this is pretty incredible. Because you are right. Like, I didn't realize how much, but yeah, your Pixar, they have the Lucasfilm, so they have Star Wars. It's a huge media conglomerate. They have, obviously, they have the sports, the ESPN stuff. I don't know. I think it's great. I'm totally for Disney now. Like, I have renewed interest in going to Disney World. My cousins were telling me, who's older? My cousins are in their mid-30s. They're like, they said that they used to go down to Disney when there was just the two of them, like on vacations together, because they said it's really fun and you have a different type of experience when you're an adult. Because yes, you can enjoy the booze and stuff, but you have like total control over it, so you can go on. You're like way more strategic. You don't have the kids holding you back.
I bet
so
I could enjoy it.
Yeah, it could be like a really fun. And they're, Disney is always adding new attractions and rides, and they're like investing literally hundreds of millions and billions of dollars into their theme parks. So, it's I think it really. You could probably go every year and still have a blast.
It's so different now. I only went in 2000, but it's so different compared to what it ever was that I'm sure that it would be an entirely new experience that I could enjoy.
And now that I'm into The Mandalorian, so there's Star Wars characters that I'd probably be able to see at the Star Wars, I don't know which theme park, which Disney theme park that's at, but I think I would probably appreciate that. Whereas literally prior to 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, I would have had zero interest in that.
It's a massive part of... It's like going to Universal Studios and not liking Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's like they have a whole world amusement park there. I'm curious... If I did go on a trip to Disney World, it would have to be bolted onto a larger trip. I don't think I could ever just go for a week to Disney World.
So you might be surprised. I mean, maybe if you find the right one, it'd be a good time. I'd be down to go a trip for the boys.
But okay, if it was a big group trip and it was all kinds of hilarious stuff, I'm thinking more just like a low-key trip. Right. I could never do like a low-key trip to Disney World.
It would be tough. But there really is so much to do down there. And then that's the other thing. When the last time I was in Disney World, I want to say it was about 2010 or so, or 2011. So I haven't even gone there at drinking age.
Sure.
With like, I had no experience with going out to like clubs or anything. Like the whole going out scene in Orlando in the Disney area must also be like such a great time, I would imagine. So
I would think so. Although I was just talking with someone the other day at the Burn in Davis about they were from Orlando, and she was saying that it's terrible when you actually live in Orlando. And I don't know
that I
what she was basing that off of. Maybe crystal meth and biker gangs and constant tourists.
I think outside of the literally like imaginary world of Disney World.
the very real and gritty world of Orlando.
Orlando, I don't think, has a lot to offer other than everything that Disney brings to it.
Yeah, I don't think I would want to live there, but we can talk with Salim about that. We can have him come on.
We have a mutual friend from Florida, so and that, by the way, that would be a good excuse to go down there. We could go visit him and his parents and
throw hoagies at cars.
That's what he told us.
Yeah, which was confusing because up here and everywhere, hoagies are not hoagies are sandwiches and not ice cream
and
treats.
They're not things that you throw at vehicles.
I know.
Our friend Salim, he was telling us how growing up in Florida, which by the way, we make fun of him all the time for growing up in Florida because
a Florida man. Every news story,
exactly. He told us that one day he took a like platter of finger sandwiches that his mom had either made or bought or something that were left over in his house, and he and his friends went down to like the local road or
highway. He said hoagies, and then he clarified after the fact that hoagies were like ice cream treats.
Oh, they were ice cream treats.
Sandwiches, basically.
Oh, I thought they were
like, you know, the frozen hoagies place down the street.
Sandwiches. I thought they were real sandwiches.
No, that's where we were confused because we thought he was just throwing. I mean, it's still wasteful to throw.
We don't
ice
even
cream
call them hoagies up here, so that's why I was thinking.
Yeah, I know. It was all. Just, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
we don't speak his language.
Whatever it was a waste of food.
It was. So I wanted to get your
odd thing to throw at a vehicle. Yeah, I don't know.
I know.
Ice cream honestly makes it worse because it's frozen. It'd be like kind of almost like hitting a rock. Like
actually, this makes sense, right? Because they don't have snow down there in Florida, so you find something frozen and you
ice
throw
cream
it.
For everybody.
Yeah, I mean, if it were me, I would have maybe gone with Hoodsy cups because those are like cheap,
crappy.
You could
ice
get
cream,
like exactly. Although, I could go for a Hoodsy cup.
You think it was like a chocolate chip ice cream cookie sandwich?
No. That would be expensive. I was thinking like actual Hood ice cream sandwich, you know, with like the chocolate cracker things.
Okay.
So, but Hoodsy cups, man, this is bringing me back. The best thing that somebody ever brought in for their birthday was in third grade. Somebody brought in, you know, those friendly ice cream cups?
Yes.
That was crazy. Everybody got one of those. It was the most insane thing that we had ever. We couldn't even fathom that when you're in grade school. It's like I was just talking with my cousins about this the other day. You know when they, I still can't even understand what this was. You know when they basically recruited us to sell magazines for them.
Oh, that was an odd. That was like a pyramid scheme. Yeah, like using children. Type
exactly,
of weird
like child
thing.
Labor. Yeah. And so they enticed us with the limo lunch and. Is hilarious because did you go on one of the lunches?
Yes.
I think
I had to like make my parents buy like 5 of the subscriptions. I think you needed 20 magazine subscriptions in order to make the limo lunch.
No, it was 10. It was 10.
Was it 10?
My aunt was telling me the other day because she said that she ended up buying 3 or 4 of them so that I could go on that limo lunch. I apologized. I said, I'm sorry if you still get those. Or
well, anyway, so I don't know how much. What was the subscription? Like $15 a subscription or something?
Something like that. And they were. She was saying that there were more options than you would think, but I still bet it was fairly limited. So you're probably stuck with like Ranger Rick, Reader's Digest, Good Housekeeping.
And magazines aren't even, it's so old school. Like I don't
Sports Illustrated.
Exactly. Our kids are probably never going to be able to have any. It's really weird though, because why are these companies, I guess the schools benefit. They're getting like some percentage of it. So maybe there's kind of an incentive there for the school to allow the kids or to allow the company to come in there. To have the kids be the sales guys. It's so cute on the streets.
I don't know. I don't know what the
swindling money from their neighbors.
Basically.
But like, you get a limo lunch. I mean, the limo costs, I don't know what, a couple hundred bucks maybe, and then the meal was worth like $7 or $8.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't that. In middle school, yes, you're right. It seemed, it was amazing. We felt really cool.
It was the greatest thing of all time in middle school. By the way, I just wanted to bring up, because you brought up new the magazines and how our kids aren't even going to know what magazines are.
Yeah.
And have you seen magazine newsstand prices recently?
No.
The cover of one on the price on one single magazine.
I have not.
It's like $8 for a Newsweek or something like that. Like, you go to the checkout line at the grocery store, it's crazy expensive. So all these magazines are consolidating, making thinner issues, mm-hmm. having fewer issues a year. Like, when I had a Playboy subscription, it was four magazines a year, and they were freaking phone book sized magazines. But okay, so that limo lunch, I just thought it was hilarious because we would go a mile down the street to McDonald's, and then they would say, all right, everybody gets $5. And regardless of what people wanted to eat, they would obviously just like max out their debit or whatever, their credit at the, so, you know, even if you just wanted some chicken nuggets, you'd get like five things of chicken nuggets. And you try to basically bring it back to school. You were supposed to eat it there, but most people just brought a bunch of it back to school with them so that they could basically just like
flaunt it in front of
everybody else, which I thought was hilarious, because everybody that went on this limo lunch would walk out of the limo lunch with all their McDonald's stuff and just be like, what's up, peasants? Munching on their chicken nuggets and their little one patty, what are they, not the Whoppers, the Big Macs or something like that. Yeah, I just thought it was hilarious.
So this is like the type of stuff that I'm like, all right, when I'm a parent, if I'm ever working from home or whatever, I'm going to do this stuff for my kids all the time. Because do you remember how cool it was when a kid, you know, other than the limo lunch, you'd go to school and somebody would walk into the cafeteria coming back from a doctor's appointment or something, and they come in with a bag from McDonald's, and everybody thought they were so cool, and they're like, oh, can I grab like a chicken nugget or something?
Exactly.
Or a couple french fries. Kids appreciate it. I think they'd appreciate it. Although I think the school lunches are getting a little better, but
I'd hope so.
But it's still pretty cool to get like a specialty lunch in school.
Oh, absolutely. When your mother,
Chick-fil-A would probably be the big thing now. I think a lot of kids
probably.
It seems like high.
Do you think Lunchables is even a thing anymore? Really?
But yeah, in elementary school, I think it would be
okay.
But and there might be some kids in middle school that take them, but I don't think it would be. It certainly wouldn't be like that cool of a thing. It might be in elementary school because you get the juice box and the cookies and stuff. But I feel like kids are a little more spoiled these days.
Yeah, that's true. It's not like a treat. Yeah. So I think that Lunchables were like the status symbol of when we were maybe early middle school, definitely elementary school. And it was the coolest thing, just like the limo lunch, when you got to leave school early or arrive late, when your mom brought you in and you just walk into class and be like, everybody settle down, back to work. It's like so easy when you're a little kid to get this sense of kind of like superiority over other people for a little thing like that.
This is quickly. When I was in elementary school, I brought the hot dog Lunchable to school. And anytime growing up I had ever had a hot dog, my mom had always cooked it in the microwave or boiled it in water or put it on like a pan. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really realize that hot dogs were already pre-cooked and you could eat them just right out of. So I get to school and I kind of like have a meltdown in the cafeteria because I'm like, I'm super stressed out and I'm like, I can't eat my lunch, I think, because it's cold. And I'm like, well, so I go up to the teachers. I'm like, hey, do you guys have a microwave? Can you guys microwave my hot dogs for me?
Yeah.
So a teacher was kind enough to go into the teacher's break room, teacher's lounge, and nuke it for me. But
make it smell like hot dog in the break room. Better than salmon when people microwave fish in the office.
Yeah. Oh, I do love fish, though. I would never do that.
Fish is great, but that's like the number one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Snafu, but basically don't do it is what I'm saying.
Right. Taboo.
It's taboo. Taboo. Exactly.
When I worked in public accounting, we would be oftentimes in tight little conference rooms, and there was this girl who would take frozen fish lunches, and she would heat them up in the client's microwave, and then she'd bring, which so stinking up their lunchroom, by the way.
She must have tons of friends.
Yeah, and then she would come into the conference room that we were in. There'd be like six of us, and I just smell the fish. I'm like, this is like, yeah, literally, like, that's one of the rules. Like, it is one of the rules.
So
like,
many crude jokes could be done off that, too.
I know, I really could. Do not bring fishy items into work in a professional setting. It just, Nobody wants smelly lunches around. That egg salad sandwiches or any type of egg.
Oh my God, though. Do you think she kind of like knows and just gets off on that, though? Or she just likes pissing other people off or making them uncomfortable or irritated?
I think her parents were first generation from like an African country. So I don't think she may have been like a cultural thing that she just didn't understand it was a thing here. But it doesn't matter. I was still judging.
Okay, so the last thing from school was the book sales. I remember the book sales.
The book sales were fun, though. That was a little fun. Because that wasn't... But then you'd go to the book sales, and you could still buy a ton of things that had nothing to do with, like,
books. Oh, yeah.
It was, like, pencils.
I don't think anybody ever... It was all pencil
toppers. Slinkies and weird stuff like that, so... But those were fun, too. You're right. Those are good elementary school memories, Pat. Those are good ones.
Thought I'd bring it back to way beyond the past decade for some reason.
The past two decades.
So bringing it back to this decade and the next decade.
Yeah.
My mom had asked me the other day a pretty good question. I thought I'd bring it to you. And she was saying, what institution or what major company do you think is going to be the first to disappear in the next decade? And I want to put that over to you. Like, you know, is it going to be one of the major companies that we think is central right now? You know, Amazon, Facebook, Google, Apple, or is it going to be McDonald's or the NFL? Or
I think it's probably going to be a technology company.
Okay.
So I'm thinking of things like, you know, how BlackBerries were huge.
Yeah.
2008, 2009, and then all of a sudden, iPhones came out. And then BlackBerry's kind of like just became totally obsolete.
Mm.
And I don't even know if BlackBerry is still around. I think they were sold off, like the last like patents and IP were sold off to somebody. So it might still be around, but it's totally not the bustling company it was during the peak of the BlackBerry phones. So,
but that's a slow fizzle, it seems like. Do you think anything's going to be precipitous and very sudden?
Yeah, so no, I'm just trying to think of things that... So
not a bad answer.
Facebook, I think, is becoming less relevant, like the Facebook actual platform. But then they own Instagram,
yeah,
and they're pretty good about
smart.
Right. And they're still ad based, and still enough people use, like, a ton of people. I think they have literally like 2 billion unique users a day on Facebook, or 1.something billion unique users a day. So Facebook's not going anywhere. Netflix, Google, Amazon—they're definitely around to stay.
Yeah, Apple,
I think, is around to stay too. I don't. Only because they have branched out from just the computers and smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So like now you're totally, like I have a smartwatch now and the Apple AirPods. So it's like they're really increasing the switching cost for consumers. So even though if I had just only had a phone and I felt the phones weren't being innovative or they weren't as innovative with their phones, I would probably be easier and more compelling for me to leave, but now I'm just so connected into Apple. My laptop integrates with my phone, integrates with, everything's on the cloud too, so it keeps it's way easier for me. So I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if I can think of a company that I think would potentially go. I could see maybe like bulky computer, maybe like a The problem is,
by the way, these don't have to just be tech companies.
No, I know. But for me, I think it's going to be a technology. I think it's going to be a company that's very reliant on a current piece of technology that they have.
IBM?
No, not IBM. Because IBM does tons of consulting work too. And they're still doing, they do cloud. And they're just too, they're too. So that's another part of the problems is I am aware of a lot of companies, but I don't necessarily understand all of the things that they do.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty diffuse at this point.
It is. So something like HP or Xerox, like I know that they don't just make computers.
Yeah.
But I don't know necessarily everything that they do. So it's harder for me to kind of to pinpoint a single company. Mm-hmm. But I could see like something like Peloton company, the one that makes the bicycles.
Oh, but that just kind of went up rapidly and then down. Isn't that kind of a Snapchat story?
Like story as in like with the IPO, it's
like way overvalued, people way overhype it, and then it just kind of goes up extremely high and crashes right back down, so, sort of like a bubble.
Right. So your mom was asking about a pretty big company, I guess. So I don't know. Walmart, I could see Walmart.
I was thinking potentially Walmart too. But then again, Walmart is super, it's like the biggest store in rural areas.
Right.
And, and, you know, it might be less of a factor in our lives, but, or in suburban, urban areas, but it's the dominant store for most of the country, I think.
Right.
So I was thinking McDonald's or the NFL. And I would put my money on McDonald's over the NFL. But the NFL, somebody just said the other day that it's bigger than ever. But I thought that they were down because of concussions and the flag. The flag thing was like a momentary thing. I think that they're right. They recovered from that. But the concussions and just the fact that they're competing in a marketplace where people's attention is being increasingly pulled into streaming services and things like that.
People's attention might be getting pulled away, but there's still this core sports following.
That's true.
I have friends that know you never played, let's say, football, but they're totally just into football. And like, we have mutual friends, and it's the same thing. And it's like, there just seems to, and I know that they're going to just pass the same thing on to their kids. So I wouldn't, honestly, if the NFL disappeared, I really wouldn't care. Because I think it's just purely entertainment, and I don't find it even that entertaining to watch.
I think we're both coming from the perspective that neither of us is too attached to institutional sports, but
I do think they're here to stay, though. I think they're here to stay. McDonald's, because they're professional sports, there's sports that are in like every high school and middle school around the country.
Yeah.
And it's football's really big at like colleges, and so it would have to be like, I don't think it would be this decade if that were to fizzle, like to rain out. I think it would be more of a 20, 30 year horizon for something like that.
It's kind of the only reason I brought the NFL up in particular is because, like, I mean, obviously even bringing up the fact that it might someday no longer exist, at least as it in its current as it currently is, would upset a lot of people. But at the same time, so I was thinking that, well, you and I don't necessarily, well, definitely don't see it through the eyes of fans, so we don't see, we don't have that same attachment to it. At the same time, that could allow us to see things more soberly or talk about it more soberly and you know, the potential of what could happen to it or how it could change. Yeah. So that's why I brought NFL up in particular. But I did read earlier today that actually NHL is having some some difficulty.
I could see that because I think hockey is not as popular around the country as football in terms of, like, it seems like more of a Northern U.S. and Canadian sports.
Really because of
the ice rink. Like, you can play hockey on the ice, obviously, in the wintertime up here, but they don't really get that. I feel like the bulk of the talent, if you kind of were breaking down like the professional athletes in hockey, they pretty much all come from like the Northern U.S. and Canada. So,
do you think that in general it's just a less accessible sport because of the cost that goes into all the equipment, all the training, all the...
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Ice time costs money.
Yeah.
I bet you if you were looking to like the demographics, the family demographics of where hockey players came from, they definitely come from more well-off families than other sports, perhaps.
I'm going to say this right off the bat. I didn't even read the article. I just saw the description of kind of, it was a Wall Street Journal article, I believe, but it was saying that was the problem that they were listing for hockey as being an issue, is like a demographic issue where they needed to become more open to, you know, different demographics rather than just...
Yeah, a local. So I started thinking about, I don't know about a big company. So I still don't have it. So you said McDonald's too, by the way. I think Walmart's sticking around. I said maybe Walmart, but realistically, I don't think they're going anywhere in the next decade. McDonald's, I think, has done a good job rebranding. I've been to McDonald's recently. The prices have increased. I think the quality of food's increased.
Sure.
I think it's more on par with like a Shake Shack now. People,
I'm impressed to hear that.
Like the quality of the food. I think people think, I mean, Shake Shack's probably a little bit better and they have a smaller menu and they're really good at specializing the few things that are on the menu.
Okay. But thanks for clarifying, because I wasn't sure if that was saying something about Shake Shack or McDonald's you made that comparison.
Shake Shack, you know, they're still really good, but there's a reason McDonald's is totally worldwide and I just don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon as well.
Okay.
But, you know, driving around this area, the Northeast, the 99 restaurant, I don't think that's here to stay. I think that is going, the 99.
99 has not really impressed me.
It hasn't impressed me. They have not revamped any of their locations, really. And, like, they all look the same. The menus are pretty much the same. And there's a new restaurant that's been going in called the 110 Grill, and they're popping up everywhere in Massachusetts.
I haven't seen a single one of them.
You haven't seen them? It's good food there, and they're all like modern looking.
Where's one near here? Where's the nearest, I should say?
I don't know where the nearest one is. The only one I've been to is out by Worcester, but I can tell you right now with a quick Google. So there's one in Saugus, there's one in Woburn, there's one in Braintree, Wayland, Mass.
Okay.
Which one is this one?
Yeah, I think 99 is pretty tired.
Chelmsford. Yeah, the 99, it is tired. You're right. And I actually don't know who 110 Grill is owned by. I mean, imagine that. What if they were the same?
Same company?
Yeah, that would be...
They could just buy out the old... Oh, what about Best Buy? Do you think Best Buy is going to go under? So, I went in the other day, too, because we tried to give my dad an iPad for Christmas. Didn't exactly work out. He got him in the mindset, but he's thinking iPad Pro. We got him a lesser version of the iPad. So we went back to Best Buy because I wanted to show him sort of modern, the Internet of Things, you know, the Nest and the doorbell thing and the speakers, all that stuff.
Yep.
I think that Best Buy's done a pretty good job of basically becoming a showroom for the big companies.
They have. So, but I think that Best Buy also maintained, like, they're aware that they, so Best Buy had a turnaround too, and I don't know who the CEO was that did this, but I remember early or late 2000s, around the recession time, they were having an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they ever filed for bankruptcy at any point, but the CEO did turn the company around. And they essentially want to, I think they really want to be the showroom. And they also want people to obviously end up buying TVs there.
Because so a lot good of people about, don't, right?
Right. Well, no, I think actually a lot of people do. Because,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah. I mean,
do
I've
you
been
think it's
Best
that
Buy.
Reciprocity thing where people go, well, this person just gave me all this expertise.
I think that because Best Buy is pretty good at staying like the most competitive price in the market. Wow. And when Walmart, like if you, so the other thing I've realized is some stores can order specialty model TVs from the manufacturers, so you really can't necessarily find an exact like comp at another, like at a Walmart or something like that. So Best Buy could order like a special version of the Samsung TV for their stores.
Yeah,
that maybe only have like they have four HDMI plugs in the back, whereas you can only find six or three or something at another store. Mm-hmm. But even when they don't do that, I think that they're just good about staying. You know, if I think Walmart knows if they lower their price, Best Buy's going to lower their price, and then you know, kind of game theory, but everybody's not going to really be better off. So Walmart just kind of keeps their price at a profitable margin. And then there's also probably manufacturers.
Collusion.
Well, no, I don't think there's collusion. But then there's also like the manufacturers' like recommended selling price too. So I think they say like we want these priced at a certain price.
Okay.
If you're going to put these in your store, and
that makes sense.
So I know if you want to continue to sell them in your store, if you want the manufacturer to continue doing business with you, then you kind of have to adhere to their, like Apple does this too. Like Apple, like Best Buy is certainly getting, is making money when they sell an Apple computer, but they're not allowed to discount Apple computers without Apple's permission. Like Apple's pretty steadfast about that. But they're knowledgeable. That's the other thing about Best Buy. Best Buy employees are knowledgeable. You go there, you learn
they
things.
Are.
And there's a lot of TVs. Like
except the one that my dad was asking about iPads to the other day. She was just awful. But in general,
When consumers make big ticket purchases, they generally want to see the item and inspect the box. Like, yes, you can get things delivered. But when you're going to buy a TV, unless you don't have like a vehicle to bring the TV home in, or you don't want to pay... Well, I don't even know that you pay for delivery, really. But... I think you want to inspect the box. You want to make sure it's not a damaged box that you're getting. You kind of want to know that what it looked like in the store, and you're making the purchase right there. I know people will do the research for TVs around Black Friday, and maybe they'll try to get the best deal at the best store. But like, I think generally it comes down to like the only pretty much computer technology, like hardware store that I can think of that solely specializes in that is essentially like Best Buy.
Okay.
Everybody else, Target, Walmart, they're like a total consumer kind of variety grocery market, and they happen to have a little technology section. So I think Best Buy is in a good little part of the market.
I for a while thought it was going to be the next Circuit City, but they changed my mind.
Yeah.
Recent visit.
So maybe there was only room for one of them in the market, and then Circuit City kind of went under, and Best Buy also didn't want to be next. They learned from Circuit City's mistakes and adjusted their model.
I'm glad that they did, to be honest with you, because going to the Liberty Tree Mall, if Best Buy left, that would be just... That's like one of the last things, I guess, aside from Target, that's really holding that mall together. Have you taken a walk through the Liberty Tree Mall recently?
So Liberty Tree Mall and the Woburn Mall were perfect examples of malls that just, where the markets were becoming wealthier.
Like
income in this area has increased, and there really just wasn't need for these janky random stores.
Oh my good God.
Yeah. So these malls, I agree with you. Wooten Mall is like totally being renovated. Like, yeah. Market Basket stayed, and then I think, I don't know, maybe Marshalls or TJ Maxx or something there.
Totally
stayed,
with you.
And everything else is getting renovated. I think they're going to make it more like a Linfield Market Street type of location. So.
Oh, that makes sense. Higher end type stores. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So last two sections, we have about 15 minutes left.
Okay, cool.
And I was thinking for one part of that, I would bring up a list from that guy, Mark Manson, that I brought up earlier in the episode, kind of get your opinions on his end of 2010's 10 list.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of biggest 10 takeaways of the decade. And then the second part of that 15 minutes, I was planning to talk about New Year's resolutions.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So Mark Manson, for those of you who don't know, and if you've never heard of him, Ryan, is a guy that wrote two books. The first one being The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, yes. And the second one being Everything is F'd, a book about hope.
Did you read them both?
I didn't read the first one. I read the second one.
Subtle Art of Not Giving.
I've heard that's great.
I think you should be able to say that because of the title, but whatever, I won't.
Yeah.
I started audiobooking it, and I thought it was literally one of the worst things I've ever heard in my life.
Really?
I stopped like at chapter two.
No kidding.
I felt there was nothing to take away from it, and like it was just kind of... Like, his humor was pretty bad, too.
Oh, okay. So
it was just
the second book I enjoyed, but maybe you would also not like that one. Okay, so this is a list that author, Mark Manson, put together for the end of the 2010s. He says, people are more entrenched in their beliefs today than any time in modern history, which is strange considering we are constantly exposed to all of the ways in which we are wrong. So that's the intro.
Mm-hmm.
And he has 10 things. The first one, lesson number one from the 2010s was... Beyond a certain point, more connection doesn't bring people together. It pushes them apart. I agree with that. Do you have any comments or agree, disagree with that?
I think I disagree.
Okay.
I mean, I think with the ease of communication. So let's say like with family member, you only talk to them once a year, right? Mm. Now you may talk to them like, or see communications from them 10 times a month.
Mm.
So maybe... And maybe like you see them on Facebook commenting on things that you don't agree with politically or something, you're having more interactions with them. Maybe the length of time, like maybe you could only tolerate like so many interactions with a certain individual, for instance. So maybe like you can tolerate your family member 20 interactions over 20 years. But if you get all those 20 interactions in 1 year, you're like totally just totally disgusted and sick of them. And like you're just totally turned off by the idea of any more interactions. So... But you still get 20 interactions either way.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think it's worth it.
So it's a quicker pace of disgust.
There's clearly going to be, I guess, some unintended negative consequences of technology. But I think for the most part, it's a net benefit.
Yes. I believe that is what he's saying. He just said it in a way that might not have been the exact way that you were trying to say it. Pardon me. Okay. Lesson number two is attention is limited and fragile and must be managed.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
That was a pretty good lesson. We are certainly learning to do that. And there's definitely going to be a big market for attention things in the next decade.
Our attention is getting pulled from all directions, for sure. A lot of things to manage in life, but we're also more productive. I feel that we are a way more productive generation than past generations.
Yes. So. And I think it was last week on this program, talking with my guests about how we shouldn't get arrogant, younger generations, millennials, Zs, thinking that we're special in some sense. We just happen to be born at a time of massively available technology to increase our productivity.
Right.
Like, we're not inherently smarter. We're
just
have these resources that were not available before.
Right. And I would totally expect future generations to have a exponential or better benefit than we did.
Yeah.
So we'll be in the same spot.
Pretty much. And I think it should be largely our responsibility to not like lord over other generations, but to like help them to understand and to adapt to technology.
I feel like there's a term for that when you're critical, when one generation is critical of like the newer generation, but and a past generation, but I don't remember what it is.
I know that there's the, when looking to the past with happiness, it's the rose colored glasses and Pollyanna effect. Okay. So lesson number three. The most important life skill right now is probably the ability to learn well on your own. It's kind of
right
hard
now.
To, yeah, it's I mean, kind of hard without the elaborations that he gets into to get exactly.
I don't disagree. There's nothing about that I probably disagree with. So.
Okay,
it's a good skill to have regardless. I don't know. May not be the best skill, but certainly being able to teach yourself new skills on your own.
I think that's kind of what he means.
Literacy is needed for that. Generally, then good.
Lesson number four, exposing people to complexity motivates them to seek out simplicity.
Yes. So Hitler talks about this in Mein Kampf, and other authors that who have studied Hitler have also referenced this, how most people do not want to hear from politicians the complexities of things. Sometimes the easier message is the thing that they're willing to believe. So, but which is unfortunately not a good thing, by the way.
It's not a good thing, but I fully agree with that assessment.
Which politicians need to be aware of that, though. I think sometimes, like, for instance, I don't want to stop you at every single point, but like Andrew Yang, for instance. Okay, I know you and I are both huge fans of Andrew Yang, but he's so good during his 1 hour, 2 hour formats talking about things when he gets to go in depth, and people like you or I or other people who are even listening to those 1 or 2 hour interviews are interested in this stuff, which is why they're listening to him there. Mm-hmm. But then when you have like a person who's maybe casually interested in politics, who maybe just watches the debates, which by the way, totally better than not doing anything. Like,
sure.
I think debates, you totally learn a huge amount about the candidates, but Yang,
it's more social stuff.
It is.
Like how they interact with other politicians, how they interact with...
It is that. They could prove themselves to the American people in a short bit, I think.
They could.
But it's certainly more difficult. And I don't think Andrew Yang excels in those formats yet, but he's getting better.
He could, he could definitely get better at... you're right. It's like once you know something like that about marketing and being extremely direct and how effective that is, do you decide from a moral standpoint to not do that, or do you just embrace it and go with it? It's sort of like the whole, the Cambridge Analytica thing from this past decade where people were highly specific people were targeted to flip them in favor of Trump, right? So, like, is that a moral technique? Because some people that I've talked to have said, it's available to both sides. They both theoretically know that you could do that. So, like, it's a technique. What's wrong with it? I don't understand. Yeah. And then other people say, well, no, I think that it's different from something that you should be able to do.
I think the responsible thing to do is maybe provide a summary of what you're trying to do, and then say if you'd like more information, like it's very transparent and available here.
That's true.
If you're getting your news sources from very few news sources, if you're getting your news from very few sources, it also makes it tough though, because you might be thinking you're consuming accurate information and you might be getting misled. So next one.
Number five. We currently live in a golden age of art without even realizing it.
I like that. I'm not huge into art, but I think we're going to look back on this decade and things that were created.
I don't think he just means strictly from a painting, artistic museum standpoint. Totally. I think he just means consumer art.
Like
movies and television any performance art as well as the visual arts.
Sure.
Cool. Lesson number six, like everything else, vulnerability can be corrupted by the desire for social status. That one is a bit hard to understand without reading the piece about it, so I'll kind of skip over that unless you have an opinion. Lesson number seven, college may no longer be worth it.
I think college is worth it if you totally have an understanding of what are you studying, what are the realistic jobs you're going to be able to get after college with that, and how much you're going to earn, and then the debt load that you're willing to take on to achieve this degree, is it going to be worthwhile based off of the salary you're going to make? I think there is an onus on the schools and the government to report this to incoming freshmen or applicants to say, hey, you're going to study women's relations or gender studies. You know, this is what you're going to be expected to make after school. These are what exiting seniors have for starting salaries. This is what their jobs are. Mm-hmm. You study accounting, finance, engineering. I think it all needs to be reported. I think people would be making better decisions about... And then maybe you decide college isn't for me. I mean, if I'm only going to make 60 grand in this and this is the only thing I'm interested in, maybe I go do something else.
Pursue another path. Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself. Lesson number eight. The urban-rural divide probably drives most sociopolitical problems far more than ideology.
It's tough. I feel like they're so intertwined. Like the urban-rural divide also contributes to ideology. Like, I don't know which came first, chicken or the egg. I would assume it's
like a nature-nurture debate.
Yeah.
I see that.
They both have a place. I don't know about more, but they both have a place for sure.
Okay. Lesson number nine. No one will admit it, but thank God for our corporate overlords.
Is this the Amazon, Google that you were referencing earlier?
And based on the elaboration on that lesson, he was saying that basically, like, all these companies are building infrastructure that no government or anybody else is capable of building right now.
And I totally agree with that. I mean, capitalism, I think we're there, again, as I said before, an earlier point, there are unintended consequences. When it gets really bad, or it could get really bad, I think we need to have serious conversations about it. Society needs to learn, have conversations about the potential risks, and government should regulate where necessary. But ultimately, we're totally better off as humans, and especially productivity-wise and
jobs, I tend to agree with
job
you.
Creation. And yeah.
And the last lesson is number 10. While it is undoubtedly the best time to be alive, that doesn't mean it's the easiest.
True.
Yeah, I thought that was a very poignant one. So anyway, that list, if you want to read it more in detail, is on Mark Manson's. It's contained in the link in his bio on Instagram.
Okay.
If you look for it. And I think that you, Ryan, if you read some of them in detail, would be interested in that.
Sure.
So, okay. The last couple minutes, maybe we should do the PSA first.
Let's do the PSA. So I chose a firearm safety PSA. So this says the 4 rules of gun safety, and I haven't read it yet. So I'm hoping I think these are good rules. Well, I'll tell you if I think so at the end. So this is what it says. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. So rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Treat any gun as if they are loaded. Okay, yep. I agree with that one. Next rule, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy, regardless of whether or not you think is loaded or not, and I agree with that. Number 2, or if you think it's real or not, just good practice to always keep a firearm, something that represents a firearm, in a safe direction. Mm-hmm. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. I agree with that. And rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. Yeah, these are the 4 rules I think we learned when we went to go carry.
Yeah, I have a little card on the side of my...
Yes, but I don't know why you would start a rule at rule 0, so that doesn't make sense to whoever wrote that.
That's dumb, yeah.
There's 4 rules.
Okay, good choice. I like that. I didn't even know that one was in there. We got stuck in the farmer's market section
for
a while.
Hidden.
Okay, so we only have 4 minutes left, but I just wanted to quickly talk about New Year's resolutions, if you had any of them. Any big ones, any expectations or major hopes or dreads or anything for, I guess, try to keep it positive, but for 2020 and for the next decade.
Yeah. So I think it'd be cool to invest in some rental property next year, more rental property.
Right on.
And, you know, without like assistance from my family, like without my dad managing it or anything like that. So something that kind of independently, so that would be a goal. But cool. Another thing is I'm starting to get into wine more, and I really want to hone in on like my wine tasting skills. So I was talking to you about some, what was it, Albarino wine from Spain.
My sister loves that stuff. She does. It's good stuff.
Yeah. So I was at Mariel restaurant over in Post Office Square. Anyways, I tried it there. I never even heard of it, and I thought it was really good. So I want to get into wine. So I just bought a book, Wine Foley, Magnum Edition, The Master Guide. So it's by a wine sommelier and like a tech guy. So they created this like website for people who want to get into wine. So
it's going to improve your relationship with Celine. You realize
it's gonna
that?
Also, I think it'll improve the relationship with Celine, but I also think it's going to allow me to appreciate something that I never really used to appreciate all that much. So
that's ice probably, wine. That's what Mike says.
Ice wine.
Try
it.
Says great ice stuff. Wine.
Cool. Okay.
Okay, so let's see. Related to the podcast for me, my biggest objective resolution is to get to 100,000 downloads in 2020.
Ooh.
Right now, I'm at maybe 575 or something like that.
Okay.
And outside of that, it's to really get to know the local area better, to eat at local places. And just this past week, my sister and my mom and I went to Taza Chocolate over in Somerville, which isn't a place that you eat per se, but it's a place with great chocolate. And I already liked the chocolate and didn't even realize that it was in Somerville. So that was a cool thing. But just to kind of know Union Square better, to know Davis Square better, to eat at the local places, coffee shops, whatever. And I hope to do that, I start to kind of like walk around, run around, bike around the area more.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one. Yeah. Feel free to include me in any of this.
Absolutely.
I always love going to restaurants, bars, and little fine establishments, chocolates.
I certainly will. And by the way, they say that, I don't know who they is, but in general, you're supposed to write down your goals, your resolutions, and also make them as small, manageable, and quantifiable or identifiable as possible.
Another good goal setting technique is to announce it in front of your friends and family. So
I will do
so
that.
So they hold you to it. So that way, if you don't end up, you know, falling through and doing something, they kind of hold you to it at the end of the year. It's a little embarrassing when you set a lofty goal and then don't make any type of attempt to get toward it. So
I had 3 goals last year, and I announced those on the first day, and I regretted announcing those, but I hit 2 of them, and the 3rd one, I still have a day left, so okay. We'll see. Okay, so that's pretty much it. And Ryan, thanks for being in studio with me tonight.
Have a happy new year. Thank you for having me.
You too.
Very appreciative to be able to close out the year with you.
Well, I'll see you tomorrow. You're obviously welcome back a bunch of times in 2020. Going to close this out now, transition it. Everybody, I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. You've been listening to Man v. Mob Radio. See you in 2020, maybe on a new day. I don't know, but enjoy your new year. Take care, everybody.